When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined by old friend Jovan Bua of The Athletic, who has put his hex on the other Los Angeles basketball team. You love to see it, folks. Jovan, good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, but apparently whenever I cover a team, they underachieve. There's some drama. There's just it just follows me, right?
What are you doing? What have you done?
It's been such a weird year. I don't think it's a coincidence that those two seasons have also coincided with a pandemic. I think that's had a little something to do with it. I think in an alternate universe, last year's Clippers season might have gone a little differently had there not been that the pandemic and the break. And I think this year's Lakers season would have been a little bit different had they had a normal offseason. So I guess we'll never know.
Do you miss the Clippers beat at all? You miss watching them every night?
No. No. I miss it from, I think, a comfort that I definitely had more comfort in covering the Clippers, just in terms of I'd been doing it for so long and had been then, you know, officially a beat writer for a couple of years and traveling, and you just get to know the players and the coaches and the staff. And it's just a different, you know, I just had a different experience as compared to my experience with the Lakers right now, where I've been covering them for 4 months and I've yet to step foot in the locker room, or, you know, I've met players over Zoom and stuff, but it's not the same as actually having that, you know, hand to hand, you know, kind of, or eye to eye level. And so I think it's been an interesting year, of course, for everybody, but the transitioning of being one beat that you were very comfortable and felt like you had a grasp on to another beat that's quite frankly bigger and probably more competitive, and then not having that same grasp, it's been interesting. But I feel like I'm every day I'm kind of learning something new. I'm getting better, hopefully, and I think that you know, this has been, overall, it's been a fun year. And you know, I think covering LeBron is something that when I, you know, 30 years from now, when I'm looking back on my career, I'll be able to say that, which is really cool.
Well, I do have some bad news for you, Jovan.
He's injured.
Well, no, he is injured. That is true. And I'll want to ask you about that. But the Clippers are probably winning the title this year. The year after you lose the beat.
That would be something. Yeah. They could. I would, for me, well, They're either second or third for me. I still have the Nets first.
Okay.
I just think it's one of those things where until we don't know the status of their big three for the playoffs, but I'm cautiously optimistic that if those three are healthy, I just don't see how they lose. Of course they got to stay healthy for 2 months, and there's no guarantee with that, but that those three together are just ridiculous, and we've barely seen it, but we've seen that basically any two of the three together are ridiculous and can win 70%, you know, plus of their games. So I think the Nets for me are still the favorites. I had Lakers and Nets co-favorites until the last few weeks, where I've grown a little bit skeptical of the Lakers' chances. So for me, it's Lakers, Clippers, 2-3 in some order. I go back and forth. But I do think right now the Clippers, this is kind of what we expected from them last season, right? I think, you know, the winning in spite of not having guys and just you really feeling like this is a deep, versatile team that can play any style. Like, they had some of that last season, but I think it's probably a better roster this year, I would say. But also, Ty has unlocked some things, and I think has done a better job than Doc did. So, I think the Clippers, and no one's really talking about it. I think, you know, you are one of the few people I've heard from a national, you know, non-LA, sphere, like, talk about it, where it's just everyone's talking Lakers, Nets, Bucks, Sixers, Jazz, Suns, even Denver now with how well they've played and Jokic probably being the MVP. Like, the Clippers have flown under the radar, and I think they like that, but I think they should be in that conversation.
I was going to say, this is probably for the best for Paul George and Kawhi and this group to be flying under the radar right now.
I agree.
It's different. Their roles are better. I like that they're more top heavy than they were last year, and they don't have the weird dynamic of we're the old guard that played above our head, that Tobias Harris and Gallinari and Lou Will and all that kind of stuff, which was fun, but different group. And now it's just different. I'm still wondering about the point guard spot. Rondo, we'll see what he does in the playoffs, but Kennard in and out. Like, I'm a little concerned about the Batum stuff and just how healthy and how much he has done this year for them, both starting and off the bench. But I don't know. I think the Clippers, I believe in them more than anybody else. And I think the Lakers, before the season, I had them I would be floored if they went back-to-back. And it wasn't because I didn't believe in the talent. It was because of the kind of season and what they had to do to get through the gauntlet and the bubble and then to come back and run it right back with Anthony Davis, where we've never really seen that before. Back-to-back, just he's ready to go, being Anthony Davis for two straight seasons. No health issues, no anything. And the West is better than it was a year ago. It's a longer season. They didn't get much time off. And I just think it's just different with the way they had to come back and what they're having to deal with. And it's not surprising that they're dealing with injury issues and people in and out of the lineup and stuff like that, just because of what they did last year and just how many miles and just what their current predicament is. Is that fair?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communication's only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
Yeah, yeah. I recently wrote a few days ago a story with my colleague Bill Oram, who's my Lakers co-beat writer with, and we did like 10 warning signs that this season was not going the way the Lakers wanted, and that, you know, first one was just short offseason, like shortest offseason in NBA history. And I know that that's circumstantial just because of the pandemic and everything, but it is what it is. Like, they had 71 days off, right? Like, that is barely, you know, not even 2.5 months, where, you know, even a typical, you know, typical NBA offseason for a champion is 4 months. If you miss the playoffs, you're looking at almost 6 months. So to have barely over 2 months, like, that's just unprecedented. And Anthony Davis basically said what you said, you know, earlier in the season to me, when I interviewed him for a feature I wrote, that he was just like, yeah, normally in the off season, I take a month, like I take the first, like whenever my season ends, I take that next month off. I don't touch a basketball. I don't touch a weight. Like, I just let my body rest and recover and decompress from the season. And then the second that, you know, that 30th day or 31st day, I'm back in the gym. I'm back weightlifting. I'm back in my groove. And I didn't get to do that because, you know, a month after the season, I'm looking at a month from now, we're back in training camp and I have to get back in shape. So I mean, AD, I guess, did take that rest. And I think that's why he had a slow start to the season, was just he wasn't fully in shape and wasn't fully back to himself. And I think we've seen that. But yeah, I mean, this has been the hardest season. And I, or, you know, arguably, I guess, but I actually uncovered this number that I think is interesting, that I went back and looked at from the modern era, so 79-80 through now. I looked at every repeat NBA champion and how many games their best two players missed in that repeat season. And with the exception of like the 95 Rockets, who had a bit of a weird team where it was like Hakeem and then you don't really know who the second guy is. Eventually they traded for Clyde Drexler, so he clearly became the second guy. But the first half of the season, they didn't really have a guy. Outside of that, it was pretty clear because it's Scotty and MJ and Shaq and Kobe and Kobe and Powell and LeBron and Dwayne Wade and et cetera, et cetera. So looking at all those teams and all their repeat seasons, no team had repeated with their two best players missing more than 45 games. The KD Steph 2018 Warriors were the team that, and that team was just so loaded and had already, you know, been what, four straight finals at that point. Like, they were in a groove. They knew what they were doing. They were coasting in the regular season. Those guys missed 45 games. They still won the title. But this year's Lakers team, LeBron and AD have now missed 57 games. So 12 more games than those Warriors. LeBron is going to miss the next two games. That takes them to 59. So we've never seen a team repeat with their two stars missing this much time. And really, by the time, depending on when he comes back, like, both LeBron and AD will have missed 30 plus games. So at that point, you're just looking at it like, we've just never seen a team have this type of, you know, lack of continuity in the regular season and overcome that and win a repeat championship. Cause we know that second season is always harder than the first season. Yeah. Tired legs, you play deep into the playoffs, like, and then now having this offseason, the injuries they've had, the turnover, right? They didn't bring back a lot of the same roster. Pretty much over half the rotation is new. It's a lot to overcome. And I think if they do it, it's just LeBron and AD are that great. And they're just, you know, they're the best duo in the NBA. But if they don't, I think there are some clear reasons why they won't repeat.
Stylistically on the court, has some of it been just some choices? The Marcus All signing, the Andre Drummond trade, how Schroeder's fit in. What have you seen from the, because that is a big part of this too, is the offseason changes and the roster turnover. But the Drummond stuff is bad. And this was one of those, oh, here is a name, not necessarily a good fit for what we're doing. Like, I don't even see how he's a rotation guy in the playoffs, because like, the difference with Drummond and Howard for me is that Drummond is still extremely young and sees more opportunities for himself offensively than Dwight ever did. And Dwight knew exactly who he was in Los Angeles and knew exactly what he was supposed to do in Los Angeles. And I think it's a little bit different. I don't know. What do you think about the big rotation and guys getting out of the rotation like Gasol and their offseason signings? And do you think that is a bigger part of this than even just the time out, like the time off?
Well, yeah, I felt, you know, it's funny because there are some trends with, I guess, teams I cover, because I felt this was the situation.
The Zubac situation.
Yeah, two years ago last year with the Clippers, mm-hmm. where everyone was making this big fuss about the center spot, and I was like, you know, like, but it was funny because it would be like, oh, they have Montrezl Harrell, and, mm-hmm. and but he can only play so much, and then that other spot, and I was like, you guys have it twisted here. Number one, Ivica Zubac is better, and number two, Montrez isn't going to be able to play at the highest levels in the playoffs. He's not going to be able to play in the semifinals, conference finals, finals. Like, he's going to get exposed and picked on defensively. So that played out where Zubac was clearly the better center and Trez got exposed in the playoffs. And there's some more factors there, you know, personal stuff with him. He missed a month in the bubble, but I think that affected his offense more than his defense. His defense was the same it had been all season. Teams targeting him in the post, targeting him in the pick and roll. And so, looking at this Lakers team, it was kind of a similar thing where, again, you know, I mean, I think there's more skepticism with Trez this year. You know, people weren't as high on him. But a lot of Marc Gasol criticism when, if you actually watch the film and look at the numbers, like Marc Gasol is still, he's not all-star Marc Gasol. He's not even like that 2019 Toronto version of Marc Gasol that won the title. But he's still a very productive and good defensive player. And, you know, he's the type of guy where, because he's so slow, his mistakes look really bad, right? Like, when he rotates slowly and a guy like will dunk on him or like get a foul, like that's when, you know, Lakers Twitter or NBA Twitter is like, oh, look at Marc Gasol, he's washed. But that, you're missing the other five possessions where he did rotate correctly. And he's actually averaging a career high in block rate this year, which is crazy for like a 36-year-old non-athletic center to do. But he's protected the rim really, really well. And the Lakers' defensive numbers and net rating have been really good with Marc Gasol on the floor. So, I mean, the elephant in the room is that Anthony Davis is their best center. Anthony Davis should be playing half of his minutes at center. He played 60% of his minutes at center in last postseason. And so that was my other thing. I was like, if you're playing Anthony Davis 20 to 24 minutes at center, you only need to split Mark and Trez for another 20 to 24 minutes or you know, however much in the playoffs. And you can kind of go series by series. Is this a Mark series? Is this a Trez series? You could even go Markieff Morris at the five. So I didn't feel like they needed another high usage, like rotation center. I was fine with Damian Jones. I felt they needed another body just because there was a couple times where like Mark got COVID and then it really was like AD really still didn't want to play the five. So it was like, you know, Trez at the five, Keith at the five. Okay, you're too small. You need a third center on the roster. But I didn't think they needed like an Andre Drummond. So once they got Drummond, I was like, okay, it is what it is. Like, I think that was something that LeBron and AD probably pushed for. You know, like Andre Drummond is a name. He's a two-time All-Star. He's still only 27. People forget how young he is. But I think Andre Drummond is fine. I think he's clearly flawed. I never want to see him post up again. That's just been really painful to watch. But he can do some things. Like he's better defensively than I thought. I will say, like, I'm not saying he's good defensively, but he's better than I thought he was defensively. And you know, he still rebounds well. He can finish, you know, as long as he's not doing post-ups. But for me, it's my biggest thing over the last, you know, few weeks is I didn't get why it was this binary decision of Mark's the backup center or Trez is the backup center. To me, it should be matchup-based. It should be game-by-game-based where, like, to me, Marc Gasol is their best center. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, Marc Gasol, if you look at the season-wide scope of the data, the film, the fit with AD, the fit with the guards, Marcus Gasol is their best center. And to take him from being the starting center to the third string center, collecting DNPs before this last game against Denver, where he was the MVP of the game, he had collected a DNP in 9 of his last 13 games. So, like, I think Frank Vogel has to figure out the balance of, you know, there are going to be some matchups where Mark isn't good. If they're playing the Nets or the Clippers, I think those teams are going to go too small and expose him on the perimeter, and those aren't good matchups for him. But when they're playing Denver, Utah, Philly, these teams with these seven-footers that are elite, you need Marc Gasol more than Andre Drummond or Montrezl Harrell. So I don't know how Frank Vogel juggles that, because I think all three guys are sensitive. All three guys have egos. All three guys want to play, and it's tough to bench one and maybe even two of them. But I think Marc Gasol needs 15 minutes a night, and then you figure out the other 33 minutes at center, split it between Drummond and Trez, Drummond and AD, whatever. But I think Mark needs to play, and that's something that's been clear, is when he's played over these last few weeks, they've looked great, and he's run the second unit on both ends of the floor. And I think that's one thing that's clear, is that, and for me, I guess I would bench Montrezl Harrell at this point. I would just say Drummond's going to play 15 to 20 minutes a night. Mark is going to play 10 to 15 minutes a night, and then the rest of the minutes go to 80 at the five. That would probably be how I handle it realistically, because Andre Drummond's going to start. They're not going to bench him. It is what it is. You know, I disagree with it, but that's just the reality.
Do you think Schroeder is going to be around for the long term?
Like re-signing him?
Yeah. Do you think that's going to happen, or do you think that's pretty bad right now?
It's tough. I mean, I think this whole health and safety protocols situation has made it more difficult, because, you know, as Bill Orme and I reported around the trade deadline, one of the reasons there was, of course, the obvious talent upgrade of you know, consolidating multiple rotation guys and turning them into Kyle Lowry and kind of having somewhat of a big three. But you know, the second kind of ancillary part of that was that Dennis and the Lakers have been negotiating a contract extension all season, and Dennis has been asking for 20 plus million. And the Lakers, I think, are willing to get close to the 20 million and maybe even in that 20-21 range, but he's been wanting even more than that. And I think for them, they're kind of taking the approach of, let's just see, you know, if you want that type of money, like, we got to see that in the playoffs. Like, you got to be the third guy. You got to be the Tony Parker of this team and be that quick, efficient, you know, guard who's getting to the rim, finishing in the paint, running the offense, playing good defense. Like, we got to see that from you for multiple playoff rounds if you want that 20 plus million. So I think they've been in a bit of a standoff, and that was part of the reason why they were willing to move him to Toronto. Mm-hmm. But we don't know, like, what we're going to see from him, because, I mean, reading between the lines, like, health and safety protocols, 10 to 14 days, that usually means you have COVID or you know, are a very close contact to someone with COVID. So, I mean, at a minimum, he's basically out the rest of the regular season. He might have one or two games left, but by the time he comes back, and then it's like you're going straight into the playoffs. So
yeah,
I don't know how you fairly judge him. And then if he does have COVID, like, we've seen guys, you know, are Tatum. Affected by that for weeks, months.
Yeah.
Like, so I think this is a hit to that. Now, I will say, looking at the free agent market and looking at who has cap space, I personally don't see a clear fit for him. Like, I don't see a team that's out there saying, we're going to pay Dennis Schroeder 20 plus million to be our starting point guard. Like, I just don't see it. If he wants to go to a lottery team and maybe, like, go back to OKC or I don't know, maybe the Knicks, you know, the Knicks have a bunch of cap space. Maybe they throw it at him. And, you know, I know that they obviously have a lot of guards there, but I think he'd
fit. They're starting out for Payton right now. Like, you put,
yeah,
Schroeder,
like,
in
maybe
that Payton
he goes
spot.
To New York.
Yeah.
But that's one, I guess. But I think that's pretty high for him. Like, I view him as, like, a guy who's worth 16 to 18 million a year and is a probably a starting level player, but for me, he's probably in the back half of that starting. Like he's more in that like 16 to 22 range in terms of starting point guards.
Yeah.
And at that, I mean, you can maybe justify 20 million, but yeah, I mean, so I would say right now it's trending in a negative direction. I do expect him, as of now, I'll say I expect him back, but I don't think he's getting the money that he thinks he's getting.
Interesting. Do you think it would be in the best interest for Indiana Pacers management to stop hiring coaches with the first name Nate? It looks like they're trending towards 0-2 on this front within a year.
Yeah, I mean, I personally would like to just see Indiana tear it down and go through a proper rebuild.
Yeah.
I think it's admirable what they've done. If you really look at the history of the Pacers, they've like never been bad. Like,
yeah.
And if they've been bad, it's been because of injuries, not because of roster construction. Like they have found a way to almost always be like at minimum a fringe playoff team. And that is just, I think that's admirable. Like they constantly field a competitive team, even if it's kind of in that mediocre zone, they're just never bad. And I think that that's nice, but kind of looking at the way this season went, I think this is how a lot of people thought last season was going to go, and they overachieved last season. But I think this was kind of things correcting themselves. And I just look at the roster. I mean, this coaching situation is obviously bad. I think to have, because to me, it always matters like who's reporting stuff. And for it to be coming from Woj, I'm just like, okay, like this is obviously official. Like, you know, this is coming from multiple people, and it's risen to that level where it's clearly not good. And I think you rarely see that with a first year coach, him losing. And really, anytime we have seen it with a first or second year coach losing the locker room, like that guy's out soon. There's never really a recovery once you've lost the locker room. Like it might get better temporarily, but it's never fully recovered. I mean, looking at like Luke Walton with the Lakers, and you know,
Lloyd
I'm trying
Pierce
to
like, in Atlanta.
Lloyd Pierce, Jim Boylan with the Bulls, like yeah. Those situations never get better.
Yeah, once it leaks out, that's that's it.
So Nate's on borrowed time right now,
yes.
Right? Like whether it's this offseason or next offseason, I think he's going to be gone within the next 12 to 16 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just going to happen. So I think for them, like, it just might be time to reset, because I do think they had that nice run where, you know, Paul George and with Frank Vogel and Lance and David West, like that team was a contender. Then they transitioned into the Oladipo teams, and they were solid. Like they weren't contenders, but they were still good teams. And now they're just in this era where it's like, I think, sure, next season they could be the sixth seed or the seventh seed or something. But what is that really like? You're not winning. I don't think you're winning around with this core. And obviously the you know, Caris LeVert, has, you know, had his situation and he's been okay. But like, I just look at it and I'm like, I don't think Sabonis and Turner fit together. I think, you know, like I think they've made it work,
yeah.
And it's got about as good as it can go. But still, at its core, I think you want one of those guys on the floor. And it's just weird when, you know, two of your best, whatever, four or five guys are both centers and you know, just not the cleanest fit.
It would be better for me. If Turner was like Deadman. If Turner was at the age of Deadman and he had that, like, where they saw him as just like, he's not going to start, obviously, but he fills a purpose. We can play him with Sabonis when we need to, but there's that difference in age and status and just how they're viewed. But Turner just being young and being trade chips and being somebody that they should be looking to flip, and like being on the same timeline as Sabonis was always the tricky part. It's like, I think that's part of it with Drummond too, him being 27 and that just what that does for guys and for the teams and stuff like that. But back to what you were saying.
No, I mean, I think we're in agreement here where I think the coaching situation, again, they're going to figure that out. He's probably going to be, wouldn't be surprised if he's let go this summer, but mm-hmm. you know, if they don't, what, you know, they are a small market, that they're probably not going to want to pay he has one more guaranteed year, so they might not want to pay two coaches. I would get if he's brought back. But I think for Indiana, this is a kind of bigger picture thing, because let's take stock of the East right now, mm-hmm. of who is going to be as good, if not better, next season. So Philly isn't going. I mean, Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, you could pencil them back in to the top of the East next season. The Knicks, they've defied every convention I've thought this season. The Knicks, I think, are obviously better than the Pacers, and there's no real reason to think they won't be next season.
Yeah.
The Hawks, the Heat, the Celtics, the Hornets will have a second year LaMelo, yeah. and maybe they get a real center in the offseason. The Wizards, I think, kind of were worse. I mean, now they've corrected to kind of being more in the range, I thought, but they obviously had a really bad start to the season. Toronto, we don't know what's going to happen with them, but if they have a relatively normal season health-wise, I think Toronto's better than the Pacers. Then, Bulls, Magic, Cavs, Pistons, I would say the Pacers are better than those teams. But, right now you're in ninth as the Pacers. You there's no reason why you couldn't be in 10th or 11th next season with basically the same roster. So I'm just I don't see where this team is going. And I do think it might be time for a mini teardown and rebuilding. I mean, and it doesn't have to be a big thing, but just, okay, we're rebuilding around Sabonis and Brogdon or Sabonis, Warren, and Brogdon or pick your two or three core guys and start to shift things around them, because I think this iteration of the roster isn't going to go anywhere.
I don't think they're going to tear it down. Like you said,
I don't think they are either.
Tear down guy. And I also just think, some teams where they just have a lot of solid pieces and you're like, what if they just had the year from hell, got in the lottery, had some luck, and then bounced right back out because they just got some infusion from some top end talent to pair around a lot of solid role guys. Like the Pacers are maybe the best example of this right now. Maybe the Spurs are in this group where it's just, they need one guy. Like, they have so many role player guys that we like. And, Turner, Sabonis, they haven't had Warren all year. Caris LeVert, just shooting out of his mind. Like, that dude is just getting shots up. But that rotation is just bad, with the Holiday brothers being, their only bitch guys, really. And TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell, just, what can you do with
that? I love
TJ McConnell. The ultimate glue guy there. Brogdon's good, though. I don't know what his future is in Indiana. I guess that's the weird one, but it looks like a very guard heavy situation in the lottery this year, so maybe they miss out, lose the play-in game, and they get some luck, and then they're right back there because they have a lot of veterans who know how to play and know how to win, and then they have this top end Cade Cunningham type. Who knows We'll see what happens in Indy. And also the people, we'll see what happens with Nate McMillan in Atlanta, because most of his issues have come in the playoffs. So that's why I've been cautious about the Nate McMillan interim label being taken off. Yes, he's been great, but let's just see how a series against the Knicks goes. Let's just see what happens with him and Thibs. Speaking of other coaches, Terry Stotts is apparently going to be out if the Blazers don't impress, whatever that means, in the playoffs. And then Mike Budenholzer needs a deep run, too, to save his job. And then Luke Walton, I think we can just go ahead and say that one's out. Tyrese Haliburton out for the year, and just things are not great. That rotation is amazing. I love going through the box score in Sacramento land every morning, Yovan. It's a wild ride to see who's playing for the Kings right now. What do you think? Do you think Bud and Stotts being out is a fair thing?
Yeah. I think with Stotts, it's the defensive end of the floor, of the fact that I don't know exactly what they are. I could pull it up in defensive rating right now, but it's not good. I think on paper this was arguably the best defensive talent Portland has had in this run, or Robert Covington is, I would say, better than Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu. And so right now in defensive rating, they're 29th. Jeez, the Kings are so bad. The Kings are 30th at almost 2 points per 100 possessions worse. I think they're in the running for all-time worst defense. They're in that mix. But, yeah, I mean, for Portland to be that bad defensively, you know, I think – and then you really look at, like, the teams – like, look at the surrounding teams. You got the Kings, the Timberwolves, the Rockets, the Pelicans, the Nets, but they have a historic offense, the Magic, the Thunder, the Cavs. So it's like all those teams are the worst teams in the NBA – plus the Nets, who have the best offense and you know, three all-NBA type guys. And then you have Portland. So it's like, I mean, part of that is just on coaching and scheme. And like, there are some limitations having Dame and CJ in the same backcourt. And, you know, Nurkic has been out and Zach Collins has been out. And like, you know, they have some built-in, Carmelo Anthony is part of the rotation. Like, they have some built, you know, built-in excuses, I guess. But for me, like, I think I've said this on this podcast before. Like, I always felt their conference finals run was a little bit of fool's gold, where, you know, I just thought that season for me, the three best teams in the West were Golden State, Houston, and Utah. And all three of those teams got matched up on the same side of the bracket. Houston and Utah played each other. Houston won. Then Houston played Golden State in the conference semifinals, and that's, you know, the series Golden State won, where KD got injured. And that to me was just like, yeah, I mean, sure, you beat San Antonio and or no, they didn't. I forgot who they played in round one, but they beat Denver in round two, and like, that was a nice win. But I felt if they had played Golden State or Houston in round two, they would have lost. So I did feel like that was a situation where they just got a very favorable path to the conference finals, and they've kind of lived off of that, of like, hey, we made a conference finals. But they also then just got destroyed by a KD-less Warriors team, where it was just clear, like, this team is not at this level. So I think for Portland, like, it's been a nice run, but they probably need a new voice. At some point, I think they're going to have to break up the Dame and CJ combo. I don't think that's going to work, where, like, I just think they're realistic second round in a normal year. I mean, they're realistic ceiling.
Putting it out there,
second,
right? Like, yeah, the Dame Dollar, who's just not happy about the no fans last night for the NBA playoffs, but also just the unhappiness there in Portland. Like, that getting out there a little bit, very important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, look at who's reporting it. And obviously, you know, Chris Haynes has the best relationship with Dame. And I think that, yeah. So, and then with Bud, for me, it's just there's a little bit of Doc Rivers, like Doc Rivers syndrome there, where it's like, okay, you guys like set all these franchise records in the regular season and you have these great records and great seeding and stuff. But like, when it comes to the playoffs, there's a lot of underachievement. And I think it's not only in Milwaukee, it's going back to Atlanta and some of those seasons where, you know, you had the 1 year where they didn't make the conference finals, but they barely got there. They almost lost to that Wizards team, if I'm remembering correctly, and then got smoked, you know, absolutely smoked by the Cavs.
Yeah.
And I just feel like at some point, really the last two postseasons have done it for me, where it's not just, you know, it's look, like Miami clearly had a special run. You know, they ended up making the finals. I think people forget, like, they took two games off the Lakers and they weren't healthy. Like, that could have been a seven game series, or maybe even Miami winning with the way that they were playing at that point. So Miami had a special bubble run, but for me, it was just the lack of adjusting and going down. And that's where I had my biggest issues with Doc in the bubble, of, okay, you are married to playing Montrezl Harrell, but it is so clearly not working, and everybody around the Clippers knows it's not working. And even the players are kind of referencing it in the media sessions. And then you go into game seven when you guys have blown a 3-1 lead and play Montrezl Harrell 24 minutes and more time than Ivica Zubac. And it's just like, how are you going down doing this? And we've seen the same type of behavior from Bud, where he refuses to adjust his defense and he runs the same defensive scheme. And it works in the regular season, but it did not work against Miami. And it really played into Miami's favor, where Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic were getting wide open mid-range jumper after wide open mid-range jumper. And it was just like, you have to adjust at some point. Like, mm-hmm. that is part of, like, you know, Steve Kerr putting on Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen, and like, or Steve Kerr starting Draymond Green over David Lee, or going small with Draymond at center.
You
like,
have Andy Lou driving off the side of the road as he listens to
this podcast. And that was just like the first thing that came to mind of like, you know, stark adjustments in a playoff series. And now I know Steve Kerr has kind of lost some of that sheen, but I think it's just like, you have to do those types of things in a playoff run to win a championship. And Bud has yet to show that. And I know they made some changes this year, so we'll see how that plays out. I mean, they're playing much better. They just beat Brooklyn twice. Like, they are looking to me like they're still in that mix. But
well, not fully healthy Brooklyn. And also,
yes,
it's not the main two. Like, the Brooklyn stuff for me comes down to Harden and KD. It's not Kyrie. Kyrie being the third. Like, Kyrie's important, don't get me wrong, but I think it ultimately comes down to Harden and KD. If those two are healthy down the stretch, then I just don't know how you stop pick and pop with Harden and KD. I think Kyrie just being on the outside makes it that much more dangerous. Him and Joe Harris just floating around doing their thing. But I don't know. I'm not looking too much into the Bucks beating the Nets twice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still
starting Brook Lopez. Don't love that.
Yeah, no, I think the PJ Tucker's defense against KD is like semi encouraging, where you're not going to stop KD, especially in a playoff setting. But I think PJ Tucker is one of the guys best equipped to defend him,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, again, it's not that was what was so nice for Golden State, you know, having multiple guys you could throw at LeBron in the finals, but especially a guy like. Like, I see PJ Tucker as like an Andre Iguodala, where it's like he's going to specifically be deployed on Kevin Durant. He's going to have a very specific role in that series. And I think he's pretty good at it, you know, given his lack of size, his age. I just think the overall decline in his game, like, he can still check KD reasonably well.
Do you know who the Bucks could use?
Who? Malcolm Brogdon?
Oh, no. He plays for the Hawks. They almost had him.
Bogey. Tony Snell?
They had Bogdanovich. That stuff doesn't go. Like,
yeah,
that is the spot.
Yeah.
I mean, as someone just watching all time great season from Bogey, that dude doesn't miss Jovan. Like, I love having Bogdanovich in the backcourt with Trey. It's so much fun. He is the only one that can take away some of Trey's usage. The only one that can be like, you know, it's my turn. Doing my thing. I love it. And the Bucks could use him in their closing five. That would be really helpful when you're trying to match offensive firepower against, let's just say, the Brooklyn Nets, maybe.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's had a really good year, obviously more recently, but, you know, helped turn around the Hawks season. And I think that's just going to be one of those, like, funny what-ifs that – people are probably going to forget about because he's not a household name, but that was just such a weird situation. You know, we just rarely see something like that happen. So for that to go down the way it went down, and then him to clearly be, I think, like, that type of missing piece that would have taken them to a different level. It's just, it's unfortunate for the Bucks.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Jovan. Your MVP as of right now.
Jokic.
Okay.
I think my one knock when the Jokic buzz was starting was that I felt they were too low of a seed, because at that point I think they were either fifth or sixth, and you rarely I'm weird and like to go through NBA history and just kind of like look at random stuff. And when I was making a case earlier in the season for LeBron, so I did all this research on MVP, and it was like, pretty much every MVP winner is on a top three seed. The one recent example that was, you know, much lower was Russell Westbrook. But I also think that that's probably the most criticized or one of the most criticized MVPs of the last 30, 40 years. So I don't think that's the best example to use in terms of, you know, giving a lower seeded guy the award. So for me, like when we've had these discussions, it's like, okay, sure, you could throw in Steph or Luka or Dame or Jimmy Butler or whoever you want to throw in, but I just don't think those guys are on good enough teams. And we just have a historical precedent throughout NBA history where, you know, yes, stats matter, value to your team matters, usage matters, but team record also is always a factor, except for really that 2017 Westbrook season. So looking at it, I mean, for me, it's been, of course, Jokic now, they've been in that 3-4 mix. So, you know, he's right there for that threshold of being an MVP. I look at Embiid, of course, though he's missed, I think, probably too many games to win it, but he'll probably have him second. Giannis, the Nets guys, I think have just all missed too many games. Chris Paul has made a late push for me, not to win it, but to be in that fourth or fifth spot. Utah, I wouldn't put any of those guys. Kawhi, I think, has sneakily, he has missed a lot of games, so he's also kind of a borderline guy just in terms of like missed games, but I think Kawhi's had a better season than people realize. And then I guess if Dallas can stay in five, Luka might get that fourth or fifth spot on my ballot, depending on, you know, where they finish. So I think for me, it's really been a season of Jokic versus Embiid, but I think Jokic has been slightly better. The Nuggets haven't been as good as the Sixers, but Embiid has just missed so many games. Jokic has played in every game. And I think for them to be 9-2 since Jamal Murray went down, and you know, this is a deep team, but also a very top-heavy team in terms of offensive creation. Like, without Jamal Murray, they have guys who can finish, but they don't have a lot of guys who can create. And he's a big piece of the offense, a big piece of their success. He was playing better before the injury. So to lose him, go 9-2 over that stretch, have the league's best offense over that stretch, I just think that's another feather in Nikola Jokic's proverbial cap. And that, to me, kind of just sealed it of like, you know, because I thought, I was like, if they drop to 6, 7, 8, you know, they just collapse without Murray, that might, you know, kind of crumble his case. But they've actually played their arguably best basketball, or like one of their best stretches of the season has been without Murray. And you have to give Jokic the primary credit there. So I think for me, it's him. And it's, you know, as a Serbian, I think it's pretty cool to see a fellow Serb win the award. But my guess is he's going to win. Like, I would vote for him, and I think he's going to win it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think he's going to win too. And, you know, it's the one positive with losing Murray for the season is that Jokic will get an MVP. A big what-if season, I think, in Denver. All right, Jovan, what can we check out from you across theathletic.com?
Yeah, so I just wrote a couple things I reference in here. Just wrote about Marc Gasol and his value to the team and why I think it was kind of a column slash film breakdown of Marc Gasol's value to the Lakers. So that's up at The Athletic. Also wrote about sort of the 10 moments this season that have really kind of led to the spot that the Lakers are in, where it's not a good spot. You know, they got a rough rest of the week. They got the Clippers, Blazers, and Suns. So I think we'll have a better idea of where they're actually at come Sunday or Monday. But yeah, so definitely check out my work on The Athletic. Also check out the Forum Club podcast, which you can listen to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And then also Twitter and Instagram at Jovan Buha, JovanBuha.
All right. Well, keep up the great work, my friend. It was great checking in. Thank you, as always. And we will talk basketball again very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.